This is a podcast from The Times. Go to thetimes.co.uk.
The Bugle, audio newspaper for a visual world.
Hello, Buglers, and welcome to issue 164 of humanity's last best hope, The Bugle. Audio newspaper for a visual world for the week beginning Monday the 15th of August 2011. I am Andy Zaltzman, right here in the middle of the looting of the nation formerly known as Great Britain, trying to counterbalance the lawless f***basiles who have been vandalising this country by deliberately paying more than the marked price for things I don't even want. I've spent the last couple of days going to electrical shops and giving them my own stuff, and then installing new additional windows in shops, even when they're not broken and not needed. The fight back has begun, and the Bugle has been at the very forefront of it. And joining me in New York City, it's the respectable face of the United Kingdom internationally, John Oliver. John, have you looted anything this week just to make yourself feel more British?
Well, normally I would, Andy. Normally I'd loot about three things a week, but just as you're saying, I've wanted to bring our average down, so I've just been looting one thing a week. I've really been making it count.
Right.
But, Andy, with the troubling news abounding over the last couple of weeks, it's important to focus on the truly positive things when they occur. And right at the top of that has to be The Smurfs was the number one movie in the US, Andy. I woke up a couple of Sundays ago and boom, The Smurfs had demolished the Jon Favreau directed blockbuster Cowboys and Aliens. Number smurfing one, Andy. $75 million at the US domestic box office alone. Worldwide, $131 million and counting. And you know the Belgians and the Spanish are going to keep coming back for more. It's a smurfing miracle, Andy. All the doubters out there can stick it up their smurf. Were the reviews good? No, of course they smurfing weren't. But were the box office receipts good? Smurf yes! Smurf yes they were!
You've changed.
It has. And I quote, Andy, overperformed in every market. Holy smurf! Apparently, Andy, even a sequel is already being planned for 2013. Now, I'm not sure if I'm going to be allowed to be in it after almost all of the comments that I've made publicly about this particular one. But that's not the point. I've got box office gold on my hands, Andy, and I have to believe that my three lines, or whatever it was cut down to be honest, I haven't seen the movie and have absolutely no intention of seeing it. They had to help turn this into box office gold. And look, I just hope that this news can bring some calm to the streets of the United Kingdom. It's something that can really bring everyone together. The Smurfs movie has already made its money back. Put down your bricks, youngsters. Pick up your brooms. Everything's going to be okay. Smurf, yeah!
And I guess if the success of the Smurf shows one thing, it is that democracy doesn't work. So this is the week beginning. I'll tell you what I'll do with it. I'll try and get the Smurfs on my digital video recorder at home, John, and store it up for 3 years without watching it, like I have with the Guru. So, when we have our big showbiz bust up, John, then I'll watch him. Then I'll watch him. Okay.
Yeah.
But while I still need to respect you, I've got to stay clear.
So, that's very wise.
So this is Bugle 164, which is, of course, how the Scots say 2:14 p.m. And this week, a section of the 164... Is this on? This week, in the bin, a special Edinburgh Festival supplement in which we review the new theatrical modern dance adaptation of the 1985 Belgian Grand Prix entitled Vroom Vroom, Yow, Vroom Vroom. And look out for Tom Cruise as Ricardo Patrese. And we also review Busty Belinda's Baptown Boogie, a moving play based on the early life of US President Lyndon Johnson, based on recently declassified papers. Don't judge him, it just took him time to figure out who he really was. And in music, the exciting new John Oliver tribute act, Mickey Plonker and his incredible musical Wang. Doing all the classics, including, of course, Silent Night. That's the closer.
Yep.
And an in-depth feature on the cutting-edge British comedian Andy Zaltzman, who's doing a very, 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 very funny one-man show at 4:25 p.m. every day at the Stand. Plus reviews of the cutting-edge political stand-up show Political Animal on Monday to Thursday at midnight, also at The Stand, hosted by the 2008, 2009 and 2010 Bugle Best Comedian of the Fringe Award winner, Andy Zaltzman. Which is some achievement, given that I didn't even do a show in 2009. But anyway, I heard an interesting snippet of conversation, John, on the train. I did a gig in Glasgow, and on the train on the way there, I heard this girl just got this snippet of conversation floating down the carriage. These words: I've been electrocuted that way so many times. What other possible explanation? Maybe we should have a bugle competition for this. What is the explanation for that? What was she saying? I mean, it slightly defies belief. I mean, it shows determination, if nothing else, and a refusal to be cowed by technology.
Yeah. Could it be cooking a Pop-Tart in a toaster whilst having a bath?
Yeah. Thinking that you are the Pop-Tart and climbing into the toaster. So, yeah, I don't know what the price could be. I can't keep giving away three-year-old copies of my book. So,
yeah.
Anyway, just email him what you think it was, and if it's good, then I will send you a copy of the Smurfs movie in the post. I will scratch it so you don't actually have to watch it. You can just own it.
Number one!
You've changed, John. You've changed.
Top story this week, greatest week in the UK ever, reports Window Repairers Monthly. Andy, Britain really put itself in the shop window for tourism this week before throwing a brick through that shop window and stealing anything of value inside it. It was quite nostalgic for me watching the news, seeing so many streets and buildings that I used to know. They were a little bit more on fire than I remembered them being when I was living in London, but the memory can play tricks on you. Maybe I'm romanticising it by not picturing it in flames. The UK has seen a week of rioting, and for the first time in a long time, it had absolutely nothing to do with sport. The spark that ignited this mayhem was the killing of a young black man in Tottenham by police. The police initially seemed to claim that he had shot at them before seemingly taking that back and saying that he had looked at them instead. But those two gestures are very easy to mistake with each other, Andy, and let's admit they're both bad. But what initially began as a protest at that incident quickly became something else, that being the perfect synthesis of social dissatisfaction combined with the profound British love for smashing things. We love smashing things, Andy. We're like the Greeks with plates, except instead of smashing plates, we like to smash small businesses whose owners have worked hard for years to build them up and which provide essential services to communities. They make a much more satisfying sound when you smash them.
Well, this week has showed Britain veering wildly between its atrocious worst and its split-spirity best, swinging from one to the other like an indecisive transsexual at a water-drinking contest trying to decide which toilet to use. And I guess it's the love of free things that has proved to be Britain's Achilles head in this incident. And I don't know, there's been a lot of debate, John, as to as to what has caused this. And I've thought about this... about this quite a lot, particularly as the latest news has come through that President Assad of Syria has called for calm on the streets of London. Colonel Gaddafi said David Cameron should resign, but he is open to a solution whereby Cameron is allowed to stay in the UK. And the Queen has been on the roof of Buckingham Palace, quote, prepared to duke it out with any f***er who wants it. So, also, the government of Sierra Leone have offered to send 10,000 troops to restore order to the streets of Battersea. So, it's been tough times, but it's a lot of... You've got to think about what has caused this. And I guess to understand this, John, we have to try and understand the thought processes of the looters as they were looting. And I guess what they were thinking was, oh, look at all that looting. I wonder if I should join in. There are a number of factors urging me to do so. I feel a sense of social alienation, as if people like me have been abandoned by mainstream society as the unwanted dregs of a skewed and unfair system. I feel a lack of hope. There are a few jobs, even fewer... good jobs. I just can't see the opportunity to escape from the cycle of poverty, broken homes and broken communities around me, from generations of decline and neglect, let down by the state, let down by my family, let down by a pitiless capitalist system which has scant regard for the unfortunate. I feel disenfranchised by a political system and class that fails to engage or represent me, and when I see the excesses and unbridled acquisitiveness at the top of the economic food chain, the corruption and self-interest in my nation's media and politics, I feel even more abandoned by a nation not of my making. adding all that up and seeing the opportunity for some seriously cut price bargains, well, no price bargains, well, I still don't really feel like looting. Oh, hang on, I've just remembered. I'm a Count me in. Count me in. I knew there was a crucial ingredient missing there. I'd clean forgotten I was a lawless basilic. I have the brain of a gnat who's just retired from an overlong career in gnat boxing. I have the soul of an unusually prickish hyena. I'll put my looting kit on and I will get busy.
Well, you're right, and I mean, it wasn't clear exactly what the widespread protests were about, or really if they were protests at all. You know, I had a similar thought process. You know, were they protests at the police treatment of young people? Were they protests at the savagery of government's austerity measures? Were they a group of arseholes running amok and breaking things in a pure expression of uncomplicated arseholery? Or, and here's the outside chance, Andy, were they in fact young people celebrating the news that the UK had managed to keep its AAA bond rating? Now, it could be that last one, Andy, because America lost its AAA rating this week due to not deciding to impose community-destroying cuts quite yet. And this is the prize for keeping a AAA rating in the current climate. Thousands of proud youths taking to the streets to celebrate the fact that, in lieu of a future, they instead get to live in a country that Standard & Poor's has given the full AAA rating for loans. Hooligans should be thrilled about this, Andy. They should be chanting, AAA, AAA. AAA, 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 AAA. Ooh, ah, you double A. Ah. I'm sure those youths would have been beaming with pride if you could have seen their faces through the smoke and the scarves over them.
There's been a lot of debates now about the government's cuts programme and whether this is going to aggravate the situation. Should the police funding be cut? Maybe it should be cut completely. I think if history has shown one thing, it is that Britain is a law-abiding country that can regulate itself. And, you know, the funding for fire brigades, I guess we could just, you know, appeal to British fire's sense of British fair play and ask them to burn 20% less hotly due to 20% less funding. It was interesting also, John, that the riots seemed to pretty much come to a complete halt when it rained. And looters have been complaining. They knew this was going to be a problem, and the British Society of Looters and Vagabonds has said that Britain must invest in retractable roofs over all British urban spaces. Otherwise, we are going to fall down the international looting table, and that's you know, we can't have that. We can't have that.
The British government has certainly baked the perfect recipe for social meltdown like this. In Tottenham, they cut youth services budget by around 75%, while at the same time cutting the police budget as well. So they very cleverly increased the chance of something like this happening, while decreasing the chance of being able to effectively deal with it. And that's a very delicate recipe for social calm, and it's difficult to pull off without burning a few buildings. And I'm not saying that this government does not have the culinary skills to serve a successful community with that recipe. I'm just saying that a few of our cities are undeniably looking a little charred around the edges.
Well, I think this is a great triumph for the government, John, because we've seen people mobilising with their brooms to clear up the mess. We've seen Turkish shopkeepers defending their own properties and their communities. John, this is big society in operation, and the government have promoted this by dealing with the crisis f***ing incompetently. So they've deliberately governed in a dangerously laissez-faire manner to show the people that government is now so ineffectual that they think, oh, f*** it, let's just do it ourselves. This is how to get the British public behind big society. It hasn't worked until now. Now the government has shown the British public they have no choice. Their manifesto pledges are going to materialise of their own free will. It is an act of political genius.
It's visionary leadership, Andy. It might look like it's not there, but it is. There have been some criticisms, as you mentioned, over how this clusterfuffle has been handled by the government.
Nice word, John. And,
thank you very much. It didn't help that they were almost all the politicians on holiday when the initial rioting began, and the amount of time it took them to come back from holiday didn't help at all. You really got the sense that the Mayor of London, Boris Johnson, was on a beach somewhere, listening to the news on the radio, then looking at his drink in a pineapple with 14 umbrellas in it, then looking back to the radio, then back to his drink, and then slowly, while checking around him that no one was watching, hurling the radio into the water and saying to himself, oh, I'm sure it'll be fine, it'll blow over. Much like that parasailer is blowing over the crystal clear ocean now. Excuse me, can I get another of these pineapple-y things? Home Secretary Theresa May, she returned from holiday early as well to say that the protests over Mark Duggan's death were, and I quote, no excuse for thuggery. And to drive this point home, she then lifted her shirt to reveal a tattoo all the way across her stomach. It was an exact replica of Tupac Shakur's Thug Life tattoo, but she had a line drawn through those words. And I think that really showed the kind of zero tolerance to thuggery that she was talking about. Meanwhile, Boris Johnson initially refused to return, saying that he was staying on top of things from holiday, before saying, seriously, these things are delicious. There's no way I couldn't have a third one, is there?
David Cameron seemed to be seeking exile when it all broke. You know, we've seen this with Ben Ali in Tunisia. He sought exile in Saudi Arabia. David Cameron sought exile in a Tuscan coffee shop. So each to their own. And I think George Osborne should have been there, John. He should have been there right at the start. He's the man in charge of all money in this country. He should have been there right in the middle of the looting, trying to buy something, just to prove that it could still be done.
David Cameron returned to offer, as he said, leadership during the crisis. But what kind of leadership could he effectively provide, Andy? England was in flames. If he really wanted to show strong leadership, he needed to lead the police into battle with the rioters on a horse, firing tear gas canisters from a shoulder-mounted bazooka. That would send a message. There's been a lot of questions about how the police can deal with riots like this, especially when they're so overstretched. And I think there's one very simple solution to this, Andy. Not water cannons, not tear gas, not rubber bullets or charging protesters with shields and batons. T-shirt cannons, Andy. T-shirt cannons. What people need is a distraction. You don't charge them. You just fire a T-shirt cannon into the centre of the crowd. It's the pure power of a T-shirt cannon. It can't be resisted. There is no violent event in history that could not have been immediately stopped by firing a T-shirt cannon into the middle of it. You could have stopped the Battle of the Somme in its tracks if you just fired some T-shirt cannons into no man's land. And Hannibal would have had a much easier time if he'd crossed the mountains with T-shirt cannons mounted to his elephants. I'm telling you, Andy, T-shirt cannons.
Testify. Testify. It might actually have just come down to a misunderstanding at an inner-city medieval music class. You've all done very well with the dulcimer. Next week, the lute. OK, you're a boss. You're a boss. Whatever you say goes. Boom. Is this on? Is this on?
Statements of support, Andy, came in from all across the world, perhaps none more powerfully delivered than one during an interview with Richard Bacon on BBC Radio 5 by Hulk Hogan, who said, and I quote, you know, it doesn't really matter if Hulk Hogan is over there body-slamming all the youth like I did Andre the Giant, but at the end of the day, we need to grab these kids, shake them and say, stop, regroup. Just look at yourself in the mirror. Is this what you want the mirror image of your life to be? Is this what you want your destiny to be? No, it's time to change directions. Even if the state has to step in and really focus on getting these kids back on track. But you know what? I will do anything. Because I love my UK Hulkamaniacs. And you know what? They love him back, Andy. Hence their ridiculous name. It's hard to know where to begin with a speech like that. It was Hulk Hogan's Gettysburg Address, a call for unity in a country tearing itself apart. And it's also good to know that if things do get out of hand, that Hulk Hogan might yet come down to the streets of Southall, or the streets of Brixton, or the streets of Lewisham, and start, and I quote, body slamming all the youth like he did Andre the Giant. It's gonna be okay, Andy.
Ich bin ein Hulkamaniac. That's a bit rich coming from me. And Johnny's made an entire career out of orchestrated violence with absolutely no purpose. Hypocrisy of the highest water.
Oh, no purpose, Andy. What's that around his waist? That's right, it's a world championship belt. You can't just buy those.
Really?
You can, but you shouldn't. There have been some very striking details, Andy, in the wake of this, such as the report from Amazon.com that sales of baseball bats in England online increased by 5,000% last week. And there's only one explanation for that, Andy, and that is that baseball is finally catching the interest of the British people. I don't know what the tipping point has been. Maybe it's the potential World Series matchup between the pitching titans of the Phillies against the San Francisco Giants going for back-to-back championships. Maybe not. Maybe it's Derek Jeter getting to 3,000 career hits. I don't know. All I do know is that Britain is mainly interested in offense because there's been a pitiful amount of baseball gloves sold during that period. Very strange. Very strange. The scenes on the streets have ranged from terrifying to ridiculous, with this particular description catching my eye, Andy. One newspaper reported masked rioters on BMX bicycles armed with batons attacked a crowded London bus during the evening rush hour last night, chasing terrified commuters as they tried to escape. The thugs, some as young as 8, forced the driver to stop the double-decker by pelting it with champagne bottles stolen from a nearby Tesco. And if you weren't faffing around in Edinburgh, this would have been your chance to be an award-winning war correspondent.
See, Chris sent me a text saying he'd narrowly avoided a flying bottle of Courvoisier brandy. Yeah. Is that right, Chris?
It's true, yeah. The kids threw it trying to avoid being arrested for stealing several bottles of it.
Oh, right. They didn't think you just looked thirsty.
No, although I was, but, it was interesting.
Did you catch it or not?
No, a car roof caught it and then dropped it and smashed it.
Oh.
I guess the problem is, John, that, we live in a very fast society now. We want everything instantly. And I think maybe the real explanation for this is that people just get bored waiting for shops to process their bank cards. I mean, it's really dull. You know, 75% of all divorces are prompted by arguments started by couples waiting for their bank cards to be authorised at a till in a shop. So looting is just a more efficient way of purchasing. You know, you don't have to pay up front. So it's just a symptom of modern society, John. And it's good for the immigration problem in this country. As our media and politicians keep telling us immigration is out of control, all these kids were doing was their bit to bring it back under control by making Britain shitter and trying to dissuade the immigration seekers and asylum migrants from coming over here. They are patriotic heroes, John. They are the RAF of the 21st century.
But unquestionably, Andy, the greatest reactions came from overseas. More specifically, from Bugle favourites Mahmoud Ahmadinejad and Colonel Crazy himself, Muammar Gaddafi. Because at the start of the Bugle, Andy, you made a joke about what Gaddafi said.
Yeah.
And incredibly, it's almost identical to the statement he actually released, which was this. He said, Cameron and his government must leave after the popular uprising against them and the violent repression of peaceful demonstrators by police. Cameron and his government have lost all legitimacy. These demonstrations show that the British people reject this government, which is trying to impose itself through force. Now, listen, Andy, there are times where you just have to sit back, applaud and give it to him. Gaddafi has still got it, Andy, and by it I mean sense of humour, unbelievable balls and Tripoli. And I'm just amazed that he has space in his head at the moment to find the time to f*** with Britain. He's literally under attack from the international community and his own people. Yet, his future and his life could barely be more precarious. Yet he still manages to rally himself to say, hey guys, I've got a great idea for how to piss the UK off. Take down this statement. Oh God, this is going to be great. Cameron and his government have lost all legitimacy. Don't look at me like that. We are definitely doing this.
Well, it's the last thing that goes, isn't it, for a despot? It's like a box of punch.
Yeah.
It's the ability to rile the West. That's the last thing you lose.
And he wasn't the only one to line up to kick Britain while it was on fire. Iran couldn't help sticking in the boot either. On Tuesday, the Foreign Ministry spokesman, Ramin Mehmandparast, urged Britain to show restraint in dealing with rioters. He did this while jabbing a fork into his leg to stop himself from bursting out laughing. After 4 attempts, he managed to get one usable statement take on camera and was immediately taken to hospital with a fork deeply embedded into his thigh. And then Ahmadinejad himself gloriously called for international intervention in London, saying, what else should happen for the United Nations Security Council to react? He then went on to say, do you all see what I did there? remember, because of that thing we did with the protesters a year ago. You remember that? Do you remember? The guys on the motorbikes with the baseball bats? Do you remember when we did that? When we shot those protesters? Do you remember? You see, that's why it's funny, see? That's why. Why isn't anyone laughing? Okay, someone get me my motorbike. Someone's going to f***ing pay. Economy. army update now. Newsreaders are going to start needing the kind of bereavement training that nurses get to impart the day's economic news. Now it's time to, it's important to focus on the wonderful economy that you once had. Celebrate that time, as well as mourning the fact that it is completely over forever. The international markets seem to be clinically bipolar at the moment. One minute they're up, then they're down, then they're up again, then they're slumping down even lower than before. This isn't yet a second recession, but we might well have to accept that for a while the international community is going to be manically depressed.
America's been had its credit rating, whatever that is, I just don't understand, and I hope that I die not understanding it. But anyway, it's been downgraded from AAA to AA+. Meaning that the American national motto, have a nice day, has been downgraded to have an adequate day. And its backup motto, in God we trust, has been replaced with God. Hey, God! God, are you listening? Lend us 20 trillion till 2018, please. We're good for it. Honest, we could really do with the cash. Please, God. After everything we've done for you, please. Oh, God! How are we supposed to be buddies? God! Come on, in an hour of need. Come on!
People have been wanting to point the finger, Andy, for who the culprit for this economic instability is. And it does seem that the culprit has two syllables and starts with an M. That's right, Merca. It seems that they are responsible for this rollercoaster week on the stock markets, with traders throwing their hands up in the air and screaming as the markets plunge, trying desperately not to throw up all over the stock exchange. On Monday, the Dow fell 635 points. Tuesday, it rose 430 points. Wednesday, it fell by 520 points. And yesterday, it rose by 423 points. So where is all this uncertainty coming from? It does seem to be, you can make a case for it, being this downgrading, whatever that is, of the US credit rating, whatever that is. And America was definitely furious at this downgrading, whatever that is. And President Obama himself called a press conference, whatever that is, to express his extreme displeasure. He said, markets will rise and fall, but this is the United States of America. No matter what some agency may say, we have always been and always will be a AAA country. Which sounds like a parent saying, I don't care what your report card says, you'll always be a f***ing genius as far as I'm concerned. Or a kid's coach saying, listen, children, I don't care what that scoreboard says, you're all winners, even though technically you are literally being beaten 17-0. And as Obama gave his address, the stock market plunged. That's not a good sign. Some news networks here even had the stock market ticker on the side of the screen as he spoke. And as I saw the market drop, I thought he was probably as close as he'll ever get to feeling what it's like to be a stand-up. Watching his speech bomb with the markets, loosening his tie and saying, ooh, tough crowd. Oh.
But it does kind of raise various questions, John. Who exactly is running the world? Because it clearly isn't the politicians. It's the ancient Greeks, John. They thought that the world was basically run by a group of irrational, vengeful, amoral beings who held the fates and fortunes of humanity in their hands, but acted with callous indifference and selfish wantonness. We now know that they were right. The ancient Greeks described them as gods. We now know them as the global financial markets. And nothing Zeus ever did could match what the financial markets have been doing to the world. And bear in mind that he turned himself into a shower of golden rain and scrankle blamped a lady. The markets have basically been doing the worse than that on a wider scale. And the only way to curry their favour and pacify them, as the Greeks knew, was to sacrifice everything you hold dear. For the Greeks, it was cows and daughters. For us, it's trillions of dollars in bailouts, jobs, our dignity, our principles, our right to economic self-determination, our cows and our daughters. What I'm saying is, John, where are the Obama girls? That's all. I just haven't seen them for a while. Has anyone seen them for a while? They have not. That's all I'm saying. No, it's not. I'm saying Barack Obama has sacrificed his daughters to give the NASDAQ a short-term boost. That's what I'm saying. And if it's not true, sue us or show us your daughters. The real ones, not the fake ones. You can't, can you, Obama? You can't. The Republicans were right. You're an infanticidal maniac. Damn Muslim, Kenyan, communist fundamentalist.
Wow, Andy, you've just put our ratings through the roof.
Yeah, that's right.
Those kind of rants are gone. I will say, though, you know, what is Zeus's golden shower if it wasn't the first example of trickle-down economics?
Boom!
Boom!
There you go.
Obama in his speech even went on to say, Warren Buffett says if there was a quadruple A rating, that he would give that to us. And I agree. So that's the double down, Andy. They're doubling down on this failure. So who potentially else is there to blame apart from the US? Well, economist Faisal Islam and a number of other writers have seized on the fact that some are actually blaming the Smurfs who opened the New York Stock Exchange on the day of the start of the share slump. F*** you, everyone. You cannot pin this on the Smurfs. Number one at the US box office that Sunday. Number one. That movie is single-handedly providing stimulus for the economy. You are lucky. The three depressed, out-of-work actors in oversized Smurf suits were there to wave unenthusiastically at the cameras when the opening bell sounded. Lucky! I'm sorry, Andy, I'm too angry to speak about this. Can you carry on for a moment without me? This is bullshit! Ah! Leave the Smurfs alone!
So, one side issue of this, John, is that with the Eurozone stagging around like a clubbed seal and America seemingly intent on topping an economic pizza of political and commercial vested interests by grating its own economic penis straight onto it, and with social unrest...
Nicely put, Andy.
Thank you, John.
You can't just run that sentence on. Let's just pause for a moment to appreciate that.
All right. A little mental image for you. I feel, you know, both some penis pain in the last bugle. Why not make a... want to make a recurring feature. But social unrest spreading through supposedly developed nations, protests and revolutions spreading the world like a YouTube video of a newt singing a Dolly Parton song. Amidst all this, John, China must be sitting back thinking, well, this is all turning out rather easier than we thought it would.
Well, you're right. It could be. The culprit number three could be Europe. The share prices of the European banks collapsed this week like a dehydrated donkey. And the problem seemed to stem...
A lot of empirical research went into that joke, by the way, Bugles. That's why John is no longer licensed to own a donkey.
The donkey's fine. It was an overreaction by the courts. The problem seemed to stem from the European summit in July, when leaders had gathered together to fix the entire Eurozone crisis. The problem was with the European Financial Stability Facility, the main emergency rescue or bailout fund. It was given a lot of new powers, but no new money. The total size of this fund was 440 billion euros. And that is nowhere near enough money to potentially bail out an entire continent. Italy's banks alone could spend that on canapes. Greece, Italy, France and Spain, as well as Portugal and Ireland, are now all looking for significant help from the European Central Bank. And basically, Germany is being asked to bail almost everyone out. And the Germans are exactly as happy about the prospect of that as you'd imagine. The truth is that the European Union looks like it may have been, at the moment, a big mistake from the get-go. When Europe tries to get along, Andy, bad things happen. Admittedly, when we don't try to get along, even worse things can happen, but that's not the point. The point is that Europe is a delicate ecosystem, and the EU simply isn't natural, Andy. Think of a jungle where all the animals decide that rather than eating each other, they're going to co-sponsor a series of ethnic dance competitions. Sure, you'll get those ethnic dance competitions, but they'll be absolutely unwatchable, and 3 years later, all the animals will be dead.
So there you go. Let's bring back world wars. That's the message from John Oliver. You'll get that Fox News gig in no time. Your emails now, and this one, I'll just read it to you. Here it is. Dear Andy, John and Chris, in order of which your names will be appearing on the lawsuit filing, promptly cease and desist from reading out portions of the congressman's penis with my name attached. I'm fairly certain I did not write the manuscript, unless it was during that lost weekend I spent smoking banana peel and pile-driving shots of wild turkey out of a barmaid's belly button in Tuscaloosa. And if I had written it, I would have reworked it into my trademark and beaten to death Southern Lie versus the System formula. I am sick and tired of people claiming to be me, writing phony pieces, effectively putting words in my mouth and making me look like a real asshole. Sincerely, John Grisham.
Well, oh boy.
And we can't carry on with that threat hanging over our heads, so I'm afraid we're going to have to wait another week for the denouement. So, sorry, Grisham, but, you know, you shouldn't leave your manuscripts in bins. That's all I'm saying. I mean, I shouldn't have been hanging around looking through the bins outside your house, but that's another matter entirely.
Chicken and egg, Andy. Yeah. Sport now! And, well, big news in sport regarding two Bugle inductees into the Crazy Hall of Fame. First, you might remember Plaxico Burress. He is the magnificent wide receiver who took a loaded firearm into a New York nightclub in a pair of sweatpants and proceeded to shoot himself in the leg. He has spent the last couple of years in jail, Andy, for that magnificent piece of slapstick, and is now out and ready to play again. And he has signed for my team, Andy, the New York Jets. We have America's finest silent clown playing for us this season. I couldn't be any more excited. And in the same sport, Chad Ochocinco, a one-man embodiment of everything that is great about sport, has moved to the New England Patriots, a team I absolutely hate, but who am I going to have to... Well, I'm going to have much more trouble hating now that he is playing for them, especially as he announced at the Patriots training camp that he's planning to spend the first few weeks of the upcoming season living with a fan. He said, I'm going to do something different. I'm actually going to stay with a fan for the first 2-3 weeks of the season. That should be fun until I get myself acclimated and learn my way around. He said that he hasn't yet picked a fan and said, I'm not sure how it's going to work, but they have to have internet and they have to have Xbox. That's about it. So that's all you need. That's all you need to have Chad Ochocinco come and live with you is internet and an Xbox. Well,
can't you
that is basically the bait on the end of your line.
Can't you invite him round to yours, John? What are you, well, I know it's a bit away from...
I would love to have Chad Ochocinco stay with me. Is when a reporter asked if he was serious, Ochocinco said, have I ever lied to you before? And when another reporter said, well, there are some crazy fans out there, and, you know, worrying about his safety, Ochocinco looked straight them in the eye and said, I rode a bull. That's his response to everything. And it's a good response. I rode a bull. As if that ends that conversation. And yet it kind of does.
Now, in real sport, cricket, John, and England are on the verge of becoming the best cricket team in the world. They will officially take over the number one ranking should they beat India in the third test, and they are currently reducing India to a quivering lump of marmalade, which they are then spreading all over some extremely buttery toast, then forcing the toast into a cannon, firing it into the open mouth of a lion, before Heimlich manoeuvring the lion so that the carnivore hukes the toast out of its mouth into a threshing machine, which pulps the half-digested marmaladic toast into a bullet shape, which the England captain, Andrew Strauss, will then load into a musket and fire randomly into the air, hitting a passing albatross, which will then plummet to earth and land beak-first in the ground next to the Indian dressing room, as Strauss blows the smoke away from his musket and says, gentlemen, I think we know who's in charge now. And it is one of the signs of the apocalypse, John. Britain. We've seen a lot of them this week in England, and this is clearly one, England being the best cricket team in the world. Admittedly, the Indian team is a mixture of injured, mentally and physically knackered, and playing in unfamiliar conditions. But world number one, John, maybe this coalition government isn't so bad for this country after all. Although it's just six and a bit decades after independence, John, I think, you know, they could have gone a bit easier on India. I mean, it is looking vindictive. In fact, when Alistair Cook reached 200 today, he ripped open his shirt to reveal a tattoo on his chest of the words, "Take that, Gandhi!" So maybe it's all a little bit too soon. So that's it for this week's Bugle. Do keep your emails coming in to thebugle@timesonline.co.uk, and much more importantly, keep coming to my Edinburgh shows. Plenty of space, Buglers. Plenty of space. And keep spreading the word about the Bugle. That's all. Until next week, goodbye. Goodbye.
Goodbye.
Hi, this is Gab Marcotti here. Now, I may not be funny like these freaking court gestures you have here, but this is football. It's a serious game, so it doesn't need jokes. If you want jokes, why don't you f*** off to Football Weekly and go enjoy lots of funny puns. Or hang around with these guys, Oliver and Zaltzman. Yes, they're very, very funny. Anyway, because football, like life, is serious and not something to be laughed at, please join me and some of the world's best pundits every Monday in the Game Podcast, which, of course, as you all know, is another podcast from The Times. No, we're not funny. We don't laugh at people's names. We don't make clever puns. We just tell you about football in a very, very serious way. And I, myself, am especially pedantic in doing so. Think you don't like it? Well, you probably think you don't like S&M or genital torture either. But that's until you've tried it. You can find us on iTunes or at thetimes.co.uk.